The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Corporate radio ownership across America have banded together
in the never-ending fight against the leftist media.
Thousands of hate talkers across the dial
is what the listening public demands.
Conservative media will always be there to crush the might of the leftist media. That is to say, all three progressive shows that remain on the air.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
And now it's time for the one woman that terrestrial right-wing radio fears the most.
No, they don't. It's the Nicole Sandler Show.
No. You know, I love that intro up until the point where Boca says the person that they fear. Nobody fears me. I don't want anyone to fear me. When Boca's feeling better, I'm going to ask her to fix that line because I like the intro, but I get so uncomfortable at that last part. Anyway, hi, welcome. Welcome to a Tuesday. Welcome to November. Oh, yes. Today is the 1st of November. We are 7 days away from the end of voting for election season 2022. Getting used to saying that. Here's the thing. You know, other countries limit their election seasons to like a few weeks. We're the only crazy nation because we're all capitalists. And there's a lot of money to be made from the donations that you send into your candidates that maybe, you know, a fraction of what you send actually goes to bolster their campaign. A lot of it goes to consultants and fees and nonsense. We really need to get a handle on the election scam because it is a scam. The fact that people who are struggling to get by, and that's all we're hearing about now. The economy is so horrible. Actually, it isn't. Do you know that the stock market, and I have no, you know, horse in this race, I've got nothing in the stock market, but the stock market in October had the best month it's had since 1976. Funny how you don't hear the media telling you that. All we hear about is the doom and gloom. I don't understand why. Because of who owns the media. Each outlet is owned by somebody because we're a capitalist society. Hey, so yeah, it's just all a mess. So our election season finally ends 1 week from today. And thank God, because I can't stand any more of those ads. And I can't stand the constant churning of my stomach thinking about what could happen. I'm not paying attention to the polls because, frankly, some new numbers came out from the New York Times and some nonpartisan polling companies that show the Democrats are doing just fine. Thank you very much. It's the partisan ones. It's the right-wing leaning polls that are showing, you know, the Republicans in the lead. So here's the thing. For the next week, tune out the polls. Don't pay attention to them. Don't pay attention to the lies. Just concentrate on, if you haven't yet voted, vote as soon as possible. Again, that way you have a little breathing room should all of a sudden you get to the polling place or to the early voting place and they say, oh, you're not on the register. Well, you have time to fix it if you wait until the day of. You won't. So again, everything is so important here. We got a lot of territory to cover today. The Supreme Court was busy yesterday and today. So I'm going to save that stuff for a little later. We're going to call on Lisa Graves to tell us about what happened yesterday and what did the court do today. One piece of good news, one piece of what the fuck news, right? Let's start with elections because did you hear? Israel went to the polls again for the fifth time in 4 years. Now, their form of government is different than ours. And look, I have problems with our two-party system. But, you know, their parliamentary system is messed up as well. And so basically, they voted today, or I guess it's yesterday over there now. And I hate to be the one to have to tell you this, But it appears that I know Halloween was yesterday. I was going to play the scary music, you know, the scary music. Netanyahu's back. What? Wrong one. That one. Netanyahu, well, might be back. Well, actually, it's so screwy over there. Here's what the Washington Post says. Benjamin Netanyahu appears to have won enough seats to return to power, but he must form a ruling coalition. He and his allies have won 61 seats. That's the bare minimum needed to form a majority in the Knesset. That's their parliament. And he's embraced the far right. So he's got to make a coalition to form a government, which could take weeks. But really? Netanyahu? You know, he is awaiting trial on numerous corruption charges. If he returns to power the way things work over there, he can change the law so he does not have to go to trial. You see what's going on here? Yeah, it's kind of disturbing. So there's a lot of just disturbing stuff. Actually, I've got a couple of parody songs to play for you. Not the one I'm working on. Well, actually, I did my part. Now Lauren Mayer's got it. You know, I threatened this yesterday, and sure enough, Lauren Mayer came through. So I wrote a first draft of lyrics, and then she took over and tightened them up a little bit and is recording it. Hopefully, it's not done yet, but hopefully we'll have it for tomorrow, okay? We need a little song to push back on Elon Musk. Oh, my God, you hear the latest? So now he's saying, you know, Twitter has this blue check system. And what it is you're verified. Basically, if you have a blue check, it means you went through the clearance. And the Twitter gods, whoever they may be, said, okay, we checked all the stuff you sent us and you are indeed you. So if you see me tweet, and yes, I've got a blue check mark, I'm verified on Twitter, just means that I am Nicole Sandler and I'm not someone posing as me to tweet. Well, Elon Musk has decided that this is like a caste system or something, and there are the privileged and the unprivileged, and the privileged now have to pay for this privilege of being verified. And he floated $20 a month. Like, you're right, you're gonna get $20 a month out of me. And my first thing that came into my mind was, take your blue check and shove it. And so that's the song that hopefully we'll have tomorrow. But in the meantime, I'm not the only one who tweeted back. And Stephen King basically tweeted back at Elon Musk what I just said. And Elon Musk said, well, we got to pay the bill sometimes. How about $8 a month? How does that old joke go? We know what you are. Now we're just negotiating the price. It was about the woman, you know, the old joke. I sort of gave away the punchline, but it's, you know, guy asks woman, would you sleep with me for $5 million? She's like, well, $5 million? All right, I guess. And he says, okay, well, I'll give you 10 bucks. And she said, no. He said, well, we've established what you are. Now we're just negotiating the price. Get it? So that, you know, applies to Elon Musk. Anyway, I've got thoughts about that. But yeah, no one's paying $20 a month or $8 a month to be verified. He'd rather have a bunch of people tweeting as Elon Musk. I guess that's where he wants to go. Anyway, that's just one of the many things on my mind today. So you know how I like finding the parody songs, and I find some, in fact, there's a new one that I'm going to play for you, and it's not funny in any sense of the word, but you're going to love it. From the Marsh family. That's coming up in a second. But first, I awoke to an email this morning from listener Steve, who said, I love the parody songs you play, and so I decided to try my hand at it. And he apologized. He said, I just did this, you know, on my phone, and, it probably could have been better. But hey, Steve, it's excellent. So let's listen to I'll say his whole name because he didn't ask me not to. Steve Dearborn with Crimes at Mar-a-Lago.
They say I did crimes at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Believe me when I say it's fake news. And if I ever get my tiny hands on the snitches, Bedminster gains a coffin or two. But there never seems to be enough time to do the crimes, then pay the bribes, try to hide them.
Oh, yeah.
Documents that I said were mine were declassified only by my mind, I decided. If I could just get Mitch McConnell, or maybe that loser Ted Cruz, to find a way to delay all the phony indictments and lawsuits that I'm sure to lose. Now the ketchup and McDonald's fries, the Big Macs and the dishes are colliding. The news is fake, everybody knows. The Democrats should investigate Hunter Biden.
Steve Dearborn, listener Steve, with his own try at creating a parody song. That was wonderful, Steve. That was really good. Could have gone on a little bit, but you know, keeping it short is good too. It was very good. Thank you for that. Okay, now I awoke this morning to that, and then when I went on YouTube, I saw that my favorite, the Marsh Family, had released a new song. So, you know, they did a few that were about the goings-on in Parliament over, you know, with the Prime Minister over in the UK. And some of it was over my head because I'm not that up to speed on British politics. But the one they just did, oh my God. So, a little bit of background here. And you already know it. I don't even have to tell you. But in Iran, there is a generational shift happening. And it started when a young woman was wearing her hijab not to code, apparently. So the morality police in Iran arrested this young woman and basically beat her to death. 22-year-old young woman. And what has happened since, in the months, and it's been a couple of months since, is people have been taking to the streets. Mostly women are protesting. Many have been arrested. Some have been killed, but they're not letting up. The women of Iran are saying no more. This is our life. You can't do this to us. And so the Marsh family, this family out of Kent, England, did a song about it. And I just have to play it for you. You ready? Okay, take it away, Marsh family. And, you know, if you don't get why I love this family yet, I think you will now. Goes like this.
Once a jolly woman visiting from Kurdistan, got taken up by morality police.
In Tehran they attacked and beat her till her body broke. Died in a coma with her family.
Rounds spread the news, her name became
Shoot that
That is the Marsh family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just incredible. That if you are not moved by that, then you're not human. Zandizi Azadi means, it translates to women, life, freedom, which is what the women over there have been chanting. And the name they were saying, Mahsa Amini, that was the woman whose murder by the morality police sparked this uprising. They are incredible. And I got to give the parents, Ben and, oh God, now I'm drawing a blank on her name. They've been on the show twice. I love this family. And those parents, I give them so much credit for the values they're instilling in their children. And the fact that they create this wonderful music together is just incredible. And by the way, while that was playing, Tamara posted in the chat room, woman, life, freedom. The morality police killed a 15-year-old girl yesterday for ripping the Ayatollah's picture out of a school book. It's amazing the fights that we are waging around the country for our basic rights. You know, yes, I do hope that somehow the women in Iran get to hear that. That was pretty incredible, right? Just amazing. Music is the power to heal, and especially when a family does it together in that sense. Oh, so good. I will post that along. And the lyrics are linked on their YouTube channel with that video. Share that everywhere. Just, you know, find the Marsh family on YouTube, and please share it. Everybody needs to hear that. All right. Let's not wait any longer. Let's get Lisa Graves on the line, shall we? Because I'm not going to do anything funny after that. That's for sure. So let's find out really what happened yesterday at the Supreme Court and today with the Supreme Court. Because even though they're not, you know, they hand down the big rulings, of course, in usually in June, but they had a hearing yesterday. Hearings, actually, two of them, I think. Is Lisa, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me on, Nicole.
Oh, thank you for being here. First of all, how are you feeling, Lisa? Lisa's just finishing up her bout with COVID, huh?
Yeah, I hope I'm finishing it up. It's a serious thing, and so I'm certainly glad to have the vaccine to minimize the effect of it and to have the antivirals to help beat it back, because it is it's no joking matter. But I'm certainly glad to be on your show, Nicole, and glad to be feeling better than I was. So yeah, thank you so much for asking.
I'm glad you're feeling. Do you know how you got it? I mean, you're vaxxed and you've been careful, I know. Do you have any idea where you picked it up?
I've been very careful, but I was in a big city about a week ago. Oh. And you're just around a lot of other people someone clearly had it. So I avoided it for many, many months. But it's been a real wave. I've been seeing a lot of people who had not been infected over the last couple of years getting it. So it seems like what the scientists are saying about this being, more communicable seems certainly to be true.
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad you're on the mend. It scares me, frankly. We still take all precautions, and thankfully I'm knocking on wood laminate. We're still COVID-free here, but I think it's the more people are acting as if it's over, right?
It is not over. It is not over. COVID's not over us. That's for sure. And just hoping you and the people you love and your audience are fully vaxxed, like with the boosters, because it's a very serious disease. The latest statistics are that it's killed more than 1 million Americans. Even though the reporting of infections is underreporting because, some people are not, reporting in their illness, but, it looks like about 100 million Americans at least, have been documented to have, been infected. And so, that's a 1% death rate. And still the death rate is much higher among those who are unvaccinated completely, the people who've avoided getting vaccinations. But fortunately, the latest data shows that, a lot of people, particularly people at risk who are over 65, there's a substantial vaccination rate. So at least some people, I think probably the majority of people in this country, are taking it seriously in some way with the vaccines. But unfortunately, these vaccine deniers, these liars, these people who have attacked all the, really important public health measures to mitigate, continue to be hold positions of power, like in Florida with DeSantis and others,
God.
People who just have acted so recklessly in disregard of other people's lives.
That is so true. We have a nut job for a Surgeon General down here who doesn't believe in the vaccine. It's like,
people like that really should have their medical licenses examined by the board, because the science, the science is strongly in favor of the power of vaccines to mitigate diseases like this and limit, limit the consequences of a disease like this. And so I am shocked and horrified, Nicole. I was shocked and horrified when he was appointed, and the things that he said done since he had that position of power are atrocious. I don't think, to me personally, like, that type of behavior is the behavior of a quack, someone who should not be in any position of power, any position of public trust for people's health.
Well, that describes him to a T. He is a quack, and as is the governor here. It's, one of the reasons we're leaving, but that for another day. Once the elections are over, we can figure out where we're going. depends on...
Well, come up north. Consider the Northland, Nicole.
first of all, Ron Johnson would have to be voted out. Number one, Wisconsin. But number two, I couldn't get David to go there. It's just too cold. He won't go anywhere where it's cold.
Oh, well, there's rememories for that. There's travel.
Months.
I hear, here in Wisconsin, the dark money is just rampant. And obviously, it's happening everywhere, this late surge of right-wing dark money. There's been $33 million spent against the Democratic senatorial candidate, who's the lieutenant governor, and $23 million spent for Ron Johnson. That's like over $50 million in the last, few weeks in a media market here in Wisconsin that is much smaller than you have there in Florida. It's just a tsunami of cash. And, it's designed to keep someone who, in my personal opinion, is someone who has, fueled lies about COVID. He's someone who was actively involved in trying to support the insurrection and stop the vote, the legitimate vote of the American people in the presidential election. Someone who has actually said that he wants to cut back on Social Security, which is ridiculous. Social Security is the bare minimum that people can survive on who paid into it all of their lives. And so Ron Johnson, really, I am sad that he is currently my representative in the Senate, because he certainly doesn't represent me, and I don't think that he represents the people of Wisconsin, the most people in Wisconsin, in any way that could be deemed to be respectable. He's someone who is a conspiracy theorist and, in my view, a liar, and someone who has violated his oath to uphold the Constitution and put the Constitution ahead of his political party.
Yep. No, it's astounding. Oh, and this just does. Louise just posted in the chat room. Eric Adams, the new mayor of New York City, lifted vaccine requirements for New York City employees as well as for students today because they're in this denial phase. They're, it's over. It's not over, obviously. And, you know, this is really dangerous. Really dangerous. So
it is. I mean, I'm astonished by, I mean, I guess in some ways, maybe it's a question of the patience or attention span of human beings. But the reality is that, you know, science, viruses, threats like that, they don't pay attention to whether someone has, you know, a limited attention span from watching too much TV or too much, you know, social media. The science says that this disease is not over, and in fact is, you know, there are new variants that are very worrisome, that are, you know, we're seeing in other countries. And so I just hope people, you know, can, like you and David have done, really try to sustain efforts to protect your lives, to protect the lives of the people you love, of people you don't know, to try to help us, you know, get through to the end of this, because this is not the end yet.
No, not even close. So keep up, you know, forget what they say. Do what you need to do, right, to stay safe.
Yeah.
So Lisa Graves, I'm thrilled that you're feeling better. I hate that this is happening, but we're smarter than that. Okay, so the main reason I invited you to join us today is because the Supreme Court has been busy. They heard two cases yesterday, both dealing with the future of affirmative action when it comes to college admissions. There was a case against Harvard, and there was one against the University of North Carolina. And from all accounts, it looks like that right wing, I won't even call them conservative, the right wing majority on the court that I now refer to as the extreme court is all set to do away with affirmative action in college admissions. Did you get that same thought?
Yes, and you're right not to call them conservative, because there's really nothing conservative about them. You know, they are reactionary right-wing extremists who've been chosen, handpicked by Leonard Leo, to reverse a century of legal precedents that have protected Americans' rights and actually have given meaning to the promise of our Constitution, words in our Constitution that were disregarded by the judges who served the agenda of the robber barons a century ago and beyond. And so this is a reactionary court. In some ways, these oral arguments are just a show, because you can see by the questions, and you can actually see by the way they were chosen and installed on the court, that they basically already have a pre-decision that they've made up their minds before the argument even happens. And yet, you know, here we are in a situation where we have a U.S. Supreme Court that is going to issue a decision, presumably to end the practice of trying to make sure that people have an opportunity, a chance to enter college classes, to get a college degree, and that reflects the reality that we still have ongoing structural racism in the United States, and we certainly have a legacy of structural racism in the United States. And, you know, to hear someone like Amy Coney Barrett say, like, when will it end? Well, when will it end? When will this racism that has so risen up in our society, that has been so emboldened and empowered by leaders or so-called leaders like Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, when will that sort of racism that they embody subside? Because it doesn't just affect our political culture. It affects people's lives. It affects whether people can get jobs or not. It affects how people are treated. You know, and so it has wide-ranging implications. And this impatience asserted by Barrett and by Alito is just really shows what kind of bubble they live in, that they and their lives have not been touched by the reality of the racist institutions in this country and the way that, you know, the way that the, you know, college has been funded, the way that schools have been funded, the way there's been redlining and housing for many years that had additional effects. You know, it's really extraordinary that they have such a lack of wisdom and lack of compassion for the real history of America.
It really is. And they make no bones about it. It's like, okay, this is our court now. It really is astounding. And we have three really good, I used to say so-called liberal justices, but you know what? With Kagan, Sotomayor, and Kajani Brown Jackson, I think we do have three really good liberal justices, but they can't get anything done because they've got these six crazies on the court.
Well, I think, you know, I'm proud that these are three women who are standing up.
Me too.
For Americans' rights and for equality. I think that they are doing, you know, a very capable and actually inspiring job of calling out the hypocrisy, the lies, the deceit, the deceitful claims being pushed by their colleagues from the bench. And in some ways, they stand as a witness to this history, and they'll be able to write the dissents that tell the truth about what the facts show and what the law, how the law should read. You know, I was reminded by Ketanji Brown Jackson's questions of my first year in law school. I was in a constitutional law class, and the professor, Professor Schifrin, asked people in that class, it was about, you know, 100 people in the class, you know, just who supports or who opposes affirmative action. So we had people, you know, raise their hands if they oppose affirmative action in any instance, no matter what, the circumstances. And ultimately, as he got this sort of survey down, he ended up with about a dozen students in that class who were completely opposed to affirmative action in any instance. And then he asked them, keep your hand raised if your father went to this law school, it's an Ivy League law school.
Uh-huh.
And almost all of them had their hand raised.
Of course.
And he said, how many of you had a grandfather that attended this university or law school, and most of them still had their hand raised. And he said, you have not just one plus in your application, but like more than one plus, because basically they are the children of predominantly men who were admitted to these law schools when no African-Americans, no Latinos were admitted to those schools. And they had the advantage of their parents living in a society in which having a law degree, you know, 50 years ago, 30 years ago, 60 years ago, was a substantial edge financially. And yet they still got a plus for being alumni.
Right.
Because of alumni.
Being so a legacy, right?
Yeah, a bigger advantage as legacies. And when the professor, Professor Schifrin, you know, said, you know, how can you justify that compared to an effort to redress the real lived, you know, racist effect of the way our educational system is funded in the U.S., and the decades of racial discrimination in employment and education, they basically said that it was more important for schools to be able to get money from alumni than to do anything to redress the racial discrimination in America. And it just revealed them, you know, to me, to who they really were, you know, how they had this view that they were entitled to having a system in college admissions where alumni were giving an advantage, alumni who were predominantly white,
of course,
and predominantly from white men, and that any other consideration, any consideration to try to redress the history of discrimination, to try to have a more racially diverse student body was to be banned. But their preference was to be allowed and, in fact, flourish.
Wow. Well, we'll get this decision in June when they hand down most of the decisions at the end of the term. In the meantime, Lisa, there are other things, like other issues that come up, questions that they're asked to rule on. Like, you know, we saw that Clarence Thomas, for whatever reason, isn't recusing himself, but he is the justice that gets to deal with the 11th Circuit. So when a question arises about that, he gets to rule on it. A few questions on this. Is it true that when the Supreme Court was first formed, there were 9 districts, and that's why there were 9 justices, one like for each district, and now there are 13 districts, I believe? Shouldn't there be 13 justices, or do I have that all wrong?
Well, you know, first of all, your first question was, who knows why? I mean, I think we know why. It's because Clarence Thomas is morally corrupt, morally bankrupt.
Yes.
And is using this position of power to advance his personal political agenda that he shares with his wife.
Yep.
And his failure to recuse is truly a deep mark of, damage, how damaged the Supreme Court is, how broken the Supreme Court is, that he has failed to recuse himself from the cases involving the litigation and investigations that affect his wife, who was actively trying to push for the insurrection, trying to stop the vote of the American people in the presidential election. But the reality is that the Constitution provides no set number for the number of justices.
Right.
It's been set at 9 for about a century now, even though the size of this country has grown enormously. And the number of cases in federal court has grown enormously, so much so that the Supreme Court receives between 8,000 and 9,000 petitions to hear
Wow.
cases every year, and it chooses, fewer than 70, so basically less than 1%. And almost all of those cases are what's called discretionary, meaning they're not mandatory that the court hear them. So what you have is this faction, this extremist faction on what you've called the extreme court, deciding which cases it wants to change the law in. And it's decided that it wants to change the law governing affirmative action, just as it decided that it wanted to take a case on abortion to overturn Roe, just like it decided to take a case about the EPA so it could try to limit our ability to mitigate climate change, just
yep.
like it chose to take a case about gun policies that had been in effect for decades in New York because it wanted to put its thumb on the scale of the NRA and the NRA's agenda. And so you have a court that is handling very few cases, even though it has, each justice has four clerks. They have, computers, technology. They could be issuing a lot more decisions, but they're issuing fewer decisions really than almost any time in recent modern history. And they're issuing decisions that are solely the ones that this faction wants to use to destroy our rights. And so I firmly believe the court should be expanded. I think it should probably be increased to about 15 justices, given the size of our country and the size of the docket, but I also think there should be additional judges added to other courts and mm-hmm. additional circuit courts created. And I think we also need to make sure that the people who are chosen for this court don't have these records of extremism where they're basically chosen to reverse our rights. That's what happened with the Trump appointees that Leonard Leo handpicked for Trump. They're
right.
people who were chosen to destroy our rights.
Right. And then there's also I may have these all mixed up, but there's the shadow docket. And then there are other questions that arise that certain justices have jurisdiction over. So, for instance, Donald Trump by tomorrow was supposed to turn over his income taxes to the House Ways and Means Committee. This has been litigated for years already. And the Chief Justice, John Roberts mm-hmm. today said, well, let's hold up on that. I want to hear more briefs on it. That's been going on for years. What the hell is this about?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Roberts is that, I think in many ways he schmoozed and bamboozled the American people with the sort of blue-eyed smile that
yeah.
he was just going to be an umpire. That was, in my view, BS at the time. I opposed his nomination and confirmation to the D.C. Circuit. I personally opposed his confirmation to the Supreme Court. He's someone who has definitely had an agenda, has a long-term agenda to change Americans' rights. He's been doing it, in his view, gradually rather than dramatically the way that Alito and Thomas want to do it, but it's the same. It's really at root the same agenda. And the fact that he would intervene in this case versus just let it go forward is in some ways extraordinary from the standpoint of basic justice, because as you said, this is an issue that has been litigated and litigated over and over again.
Yeah.
And why he would inject himself into this case to basically stop the turning over of these tax documents that, have been ordered to be released. It's really, it just shows his true colors, which, his concurring opinion in the Roe case also showed his
yep.
true colors, just as his decision to deputize Kennedy to write the appalling decision in Citizens United showed, and his own decision in the Voting Rights Act case, the Shelby County case, where he personally used his own pen with the help of these other justices to gut core protections for Americans' freedom to vote. He is also one of these extremists who was chosen for the court because they believe that he will, you know, overturn a century of precedent. And that's what and he's trying to do in life.
Right. And so the thing that's so egregious, I mean, those documents were supposed to be turned over, I think, tomorrow. But they had to be in the hands of the committee by Thursday or thereabouts this week. Well, Robert said, I want answers to the new briefs on November 14th. So he put it off till after the election. There's just a smell of sliminess about it.
It really is. I mean, this is a case where the deadline was quite clear. And if that deadline were kept, if the law were honored, if the previous decisions were respected, then the American people would know exactly how big of a liar Donald Trump is and has about his taxes. And yet Roberts is injecting himself to put his thumb on the scale of justice to move that deadline past the election to basically intervene in this election to deny the American people yet again the information that it has a right to know and that other courts have ruled that Congress has a right to know about this man's taxes and his tax history after he has been shown, you know, through investigative reporting to be such a liar on this as in so many things.
Absolutely. Lisa Graves is with us. She's the executive director of an amazing organization called True North Research. They're at truenorthresearch.org. When she comes on the show to be my legal expert, she's doing it in a personal capacity, not as her capacity at True North Research. But you need to go to their website and see the amazing work they're doing. It's kind of a continuation of what you did at Center for Media and Democracy, where you expose these right-wing groups and dark money groups and, you know, people like the Koch brothers and Leonard Leo and the bad actors that are responsible for the mess we're in now. So that's Lisa Graves. Okay, but they did one other thing today. The Supreme Court today denied Lindsey Graham's emergency bid to block the subpoena for him to testify in that Atlanta courtroom about Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the election. So, but this was not attributed to any one justice. Does the whole court weigh in on this? What happened here?
Well, this is a case where initially Clarence Thomas intervened basically as the circuit, in the old days, they used to ride the circuit. That was the terminology used for the way the Supreme Court justice was assigned a particular part of the country. And as you pointed out earlier, the 11th Circuit is assigned to Clarence Thomas, who was, from Georgia. And so sort of given to him that this was his circuit. And so in this case, even though Thomas initially ruled in favor of Lindsey Graham in terms of stopping that subpoena from going forward, ultimately it looks as though the court as a whole, without attribution to a particular justice, has refused to back up Thomas's initial ruling in that matter. And so Lindsey Graham will have to face a grand jury, and as he should.
Yes.
This idea that just because he's a sitting senator means that he can't be held to account anywhere in the country in any court of law is ridiculous. There is in the U.S. Constitution, in the body of the Constitution, a speech and debate clause that protects the members of Congress from being sued for libel for statements that they make on the floor of the Senate or on the floor of the House, which has allowed some people to get away with saying outlandish things like Boebert or Marjorie Taylor Greene and the lies they spew. But they can't be held, in a court of law for the things they say on the floor of the Senate. But Lindsey Graham wasn't speaking from the Senate when he was involved in the efforts to pressure the Georgia Secretary of State to help Trump win Georgia. He was acting as a politician, as a political aide and ally of Donald Trump, and he should be held accountable. No person is above the law, not Trump, not Lindsey Graham. None of these men or women should be held above the law, and he should have to testify under oath, facing the penalty of perjury. He lies under oath in that grand jury in Fulton County. And so I'm glad the court did not follow Thomas all the way across, all the way off the cliff.
Yep.
But on other substantive issues, they are aligned with Clarence Thomas and his, broader agenda to rewrite our rights.
It's crazy, but at least they did the right thing there. But of course, not until after Clarence Thomas held it up for a couple of weeks.
Right. And held it up, just now, here we are on a, on a Tuesday before the election.
Yep.
You know, will Graham testify this week? Will it be negotiated that it's next week?
Yep.
You know, it's all in some ways, all this is about gaming the system to try to put the facts out of the hands of people, in this case, a jury, until after the election. I think that's part of what this is all being gamed for by these Republicans.
Most definitely. Lisa Graves, thank you for weighing in on all this, because there's all the legalese stuff I get all confused. But there was a lot of important things that happened over the last 2 days. So
you don't get confused at all, Nicole. You you are following it closely and well. And so it's always a joy to speak with you. You're so knowledgeable and so immersed in, you know, trying to protect our rights and make sure people understand what's going on. And I deeply appreciate your wisdom and passion and all the work you do to try to, you know, help people understand what's happening and help people stand up for our democracy, because it really is at stake.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your kind words, and I always appreciate your expertise and input. Lisa Graves, go have some chicken soup and tea and keep recuperating, because we need you on the job.
Thank you. Will do, Nicole. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, as always. All right. Lisa Graves. Find her also on Twitter, at least for now, at the Lisa Graves. I guess next time I'll ask her if she's staying there. We don't really know. I mean, we'll wait and see what's happening. I'm still there, but I did create an account on Mastodon. I created an account on Counter Social, and I created an account on Tribal. I don't know if I'm going to use any of them, all of them. I have no idea, but they're there. I'm at Nicole Sandler at all of them. So follow me, I guess. So I am in disbelief. Again, we started off, I was talking about the polls, and I said, don't believe them. You really can't, because they've been unreliable in the past. In the past few elections, they've been completely out of off kilter. I got to address this. Simon Bird says, I heard the tribal owners are problematic. I've heard that too, but I actually know one of them. And according to him, this is a targeted attack. His name is Omar Rivero. Seems to be a good guy, but there have been attacks against him. As far as I can tell, the attacks are false. There's so much angling for territory here. Counter Social looks good. Mastodon, I don't know a whole lot about. Blue Sky is apparently being put together by Jack, the original owner of Twitter, but apparently he's in cahoots with Elon Musk. And so I don't know. It's all crazy. But don't believe the smears that you're hearing, Simon, about Tribal. I just don't know if I like the platform or not, but I think a lot of the accusations against them are unfounded. Anyway, Twitter is a mess. I will have a response for it, hopefully, tomorrow. a creative response to Elon Musk. It's my way of saying fuck you to him. So stand by for that, hopefully, tomorrow. But, you know, the misinformation, the crap, the fact that Elon Musk went and retweeted these conspiracy theories that Nancy Pelosi's husband, I shouldn't even justify it by repeating it. It was a horrible, salacious rumor that's just not true. But lies are what the other side traffics in. So here's, I just came across this bit of audio from Herschel Walker. See, again, this is how I got started on this. I'm saying don't trust the polls. The polls say that the Georgia Senate race between Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock is a toss-up, that it's neck and neck. Like, one poll has Herschel up a point, one has Warnock up a point. They don't even belong in the same universe. So I played yesterday some audio from Barack Obama that was pretty awesome. It was Obama just on fire, right? Well, I guess Herschel Walker had an event and responded to Barack Obama. I want you to listen to what he said. This man has no business being in the U.S. Senate. Just listen to this. If you can understand what he's saying, I may have to play it a couple of times so we can decipher his talk.
Why don't he go back to wherever he's from and get back in his million-dollar mansion?
Why don't he go back to where he is from? He's talking about Obama. And then he says, and get back to his million-dollar mansion? Which is it, Herschel? Is it Kenya? Or is it a million-dollar mansion? Oh, but keep going.
So where has he been all this time while people are dying on the streets? Where have he been?
What the fuck are you talking about?
While these gas prices going up?
Where these gas prices are going up?
You're going to our school system and our president calling our parents domestic terrorists. Why don't he go back to wherever he's from?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? And are you if you've heard Raphael Warnock speak, and you're telling me that that the voters of Georgia are evenly split on these two candidates? Diane Russell in the chat room, New York Times poll showed Warnock ahead by 3 points. They are nonpartisan. And yes, and that's how the nonpartisan polls are shaking out. But you know what? 3 points? 3 points? Really? I want to talk to somebody who really believes that Herschel Walker is the right guy to represent the state of Georgia in the U.S. Senate. Is that you? Phone lines are open. 954-889-6410. Do you believe Herschel Walker is the right guy to represent the state of Georgia in the U.S. Senate? Let me actually word that a little differently, because Georgia, you know, some people could say, well, yeah, it's Georgia. No, let me put it to you this way. Tell me that man who speaks in that manner is qualified to be a U.S. senator. I know you won't, because you can't, right? I'm just, very few things shock me anymore. Very few things surprise me. The fact that Herschel Walker is even being considered by anyone as a senatorial candidate blows my mind. You know, we could have had Bernie Sanders. I just say that over and over again. We could have had Bernie Sanders. Tell us, Bernie, how do we not screw this up?
These are not normal times. This is not a normal midterm election.
Mm.
This is the most important midterm election in the modern history of our country, because we are taking on a political party, the Republicans, who literally are trying to undermine American democracy. They are trying to make it impossible for women in this country to control their own bodies. And at a time when we face the existential threat of climate change, they could care less. They're working with the fossil fuel industry. And in addition to all of that, at a time of massive income and wealth inequality, when the richest people are becoming phenomenally richer and working people are falling further and further behind, you know what Republicans want to do? They think it's a great idea to give $1 trillion in tax breaks to the top 0.1%. I'm not kidding. They want to repeal the estate tax entirely. They think it's a brilliant idea when seniors can't, in Vermont, all over this country, can't afford to heat their homes in the winter, can't afford prescription drugs. You know what they want to do? They want to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. That is insane, but that is really what they intend to do if they gain control over Congress. Now, I know that a lot of people today feel overwhelmed by all of these crises, the pandemic and climate change, and the attacks on democracy, everything else. I know that. And I know that there are people who are disappointed that the Democrats in Congress have not done more to stand up and fight for working families. I got that. And I share that disappointment. But let me just tell you, if we do not come out and vote in large numbers, and if Republicans gain control over the House and the Senate, what you're looking at is a turn in American politics far, far, far to the right, which will impact every aspect of our lives. So what I hope very much is in the remaining 2 weeks of this campaign.
1 week.
that we go out and we do everything that we can to increase the voter turnout, to knock on doors. You get two of your friends to vote who otherwise would not have. You've tripled your political impact. This election is not just about you. It's not just about me. It's about our kids and our grandchildren, and we cannot fail them. So let's get out and do everything we can to win this thing in the next 2 weeks.
Please.
And let's go forward together. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Bernie. Bernie Sanders. Listen to the man. Please listen to the man. All right. In the few minutes we have left, I got to tell you one other thing that's going on here in Florida today. Yeah, Joe Biden's in town. He's got a rally today, this afternoon, tonight. I don't know. They're not very organized. With Val Demings and Charlie Crist. I was going to go, but I thought it was at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Now I see it's 7 o'clock tonight. Oh, well. But anyway, that's happening. The other thing that's happening is finally we're getting to the end of the Parkland shooter saga. So you may recall a few weeks ago, they ended the trial that was just a penalty trial for the man, shooter, who killed 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School and injured another 17 people. And the jury, it was actually three of the jurors said, we don't want to kill him. He should be sent, given life in prison. But then the prosecutor said, all these people have the right to speak before the sentencing is handed down. So today and tomorrow, the victims have their time to address the murderer. I'm not going to play a lot for you. I'm just going to play one of the local TV station's coverage of what happened today. So, because some of this stuff needs to be said and it all needs to be heard.
Occurred 3.5 months later, 127 witnesses, 33 victim impact statements. You would think, what more would they have to say? Well, the answer was plenty. And they are free today to really let the killer know what they think about him, his crime, and him avoiding the death penalty, because at least one juror and perhaps three were committed to voting for him to spend life in prison. So when they gave those victim impact statements, they were limited in what they could say. They couldn't talk about the killer. They couldn't talk about his crime. They couldn't talk about what punishment they wanted for him. Well, those guardrails are gone today. And here's a sample of what happens when these people speak from their broken hearts.
The idea that you, a cold-blooded killer, can actually live each day, eat your meals, and put your head down at night seems completely unjust. The only comfort I have is that your life in prison will be filled with horror and fear. So my hope for you is that you die sooner rather than later. I have no forgiveness in my heart for you. You are a monster with no remorse, and every breath you take is a breath wasted.
Mm. That was a teacher who put her life on the line. She was shot by those people.
You were a hero.
Thank you.
That's how myself and my staff.
She was a teacher who saved lives.
You were a hero to those children.
When you die, it is my fondest
hope. He doesn't blink.
That they take you and put and burn you, and take your ashes, and throw them in the garbage dump. You know why? Because garbage to garbage. And at that time, Parkland murderer, it is my hope that you go somewhere to meet your maker of whatever it is. And Parkland murderer, I hope your maker sends you directly to hell to burn for the rest of your eternity.
Well, that spotlight burns out tomorrow. Nobody's going to remember your name or who you are or what you did, because after tomorrow, nobody cares about you or what is going to happen to you, because it ends. I wish nothing for you today. After today, I don't care what happens to you. You'll be sent to jail. You'll begin your punishment. You'll be a number. And for me, you will cease to exist. You have taken enough from me and my family. And today, we close this chapter
on this part of our nightmare and only remember Chris for the hero he was to us every day.
That Debbie Hickson, of course, speaking of her husband, Chris, who was murdered trying to save people. Stacy LaPelle was the teacher that the judge was speaking to. She was injured in this as she tried to save her students and put them into her third floor classroom, a true hero in all this. And I'm watching the killer a lot during these statements. You know, you may be wondering, what is he doing? He is staring right directly at the podium where these people are just ripping into him. He's wearing a surgical mask, you know, a pandemic era mask there. And you don't know, why is he wearing a mask? Is he trying to cover up his face, his expressions? I don't know. But no one else is wearing a mask on that side of the bar in the courtroom, but he is. And he is looking right at them, even following them as they go into the gallery and hug each other. And you just wonder what's going through that sick mind.
I don't care what's going through his mind. I hope we never hear from him again. The statements continue tomorrow. And then he goes away forever. 34 life sentences with no possibility of parole. May he fry. Or may he get the treatment in jail that, you know, he deserves. By the way, if you were watching that video, every time they went to the Parkland murderer, as that grandfather referred to him, he doesn't blink. He didn't blink. With that, one more day closer to the end of voting. All right, we're done. Thank you for listening, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow should be interesting. I have a guest. The book just arrived yesterday, and it's called How to Win the War on Truth. So an illustrated guide to how mistruths are sold, why they stick, and how to reclaim reality. So again, it's an illustrated book by Samuel Spitali. So he'll join us tomorrow, and you know, we'll see what else the day brings us. Plus, hopefully, my musical response to Elon Musk will be ready. Lauren Mayer is doing her magic on the words that I sent to her. So So I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everybody. Keep the faith. We can do this. We have to do this. If we don't do this, I don't know. Let's find an island somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Oh, wait, the sea level's rising. Let's find a mountaintop somewhere. We'll talk. All right. See you tomorrow, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to November. With the start of the month comes open enrollment for health insurance through healthcare.gov. Keep in mind that the Inflation Reduction Act, passed by Democrats who currently control Congress, extended the increased subsidies put in place during the pandemic. So costs are considerably lower now than they were. You have until December 15th to enroll in a plan for 2023. Police have debunked a sickening conspiracy theory about the attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband. The lies being pushed by right-wing trolls, including Elon Musk and Donald Trump Jr., suggest that Paul Pelosi and the man who attacked him were gay lovers who had gotten into a fight. Of course, it's complete fiction, as police and federal law enforcement have now detailed following the attacker's confession. The suspect broke into Pelosi's house and attacked him. San Francisco Police Chief William Scott said there is absolutely no evidence that Mr. Pelosi knew this man. As a matter of fact, the evidence indicates the exact opposite. Analysts say that the proliferation of social media posts discussing the theory shows how quickly conspiracies can spread, especially as violent threats against lawmakers escalate. Late Monday, Speaker Pelosi issued a statement on the medical status of her husband, saying he's making steady progress on what will be a long recovery process. The 82-year-old Paul Pelosi was struck in the head with a hammer and seriously injured by David DePape, who is expected in court for his arraignment on Tuesday. DePape told San Francisco police that he planned to talk to the speaker, and if she told him the, quote, truth,
he would let her go. But if she, quote, lied, he would break her kneecaps. DePappy was certain that Nancy Pelosi would not have told the truth. So he articulated that he viewed her as the leader of the pack of lies told by the Democrats. And he said that by breaking her kneecaps, she would then have to be wheeled into Congress, which would show other members of Congress there were consequences to actions, end quote. What? When asked why he didn't leave the House after he learned that Paul Pelosi had called the police, he said he viewed it as a 1776-type moment, similar to some of the views expressed by the insurrectionists at the Capitol on January 6th. The response from the right is telling. They either think it's hysterically funny or they lie. And you wonder why we're in this mess? Of course, a big reason is the former guy, who must be hiding something quite insidious, as he's been begging the Supreme Court to block Congress from accessing his tax returns. Just last week, an appeals court declined to reconsider a ruling from August that said those returns must be handed over. So the Supreme Court has until Thursday to intervene, and at press time, it appears that they have. Oh my God. Chief Justice John Roberts, temporarily halting the release of Trump's tax returns to the House Ways and Means Committee, calling for more briefing in the case? Seriously? This thing has made its way through the courts for how many years now? And they haven't heard enough? Just more proof that it's supreme no longer. We can now just call it the extreme court. Also on Monday, the criminal tax fraud trial against the Trump Organization began with New York prosecutors laying out an alleged 15-year scheme within the organization to pay high-level executives in perks like luxury cars and apartments without paying taxes on them. During opening statements on Monday, prosecutors explained the scheme. The Trump Organization's longtime chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, has pleaded guilty. Prosecutors say he's gotten at least $1.76 million in perks that included rent on a Manhattan apartment, a leased Mercedes-Benz cars, private school tuition for his grandchildren. The lawyers for the Trump Organization have thrown Weisselberg under the bus, claiming that they knew nothing of this scam. Wow. By the way, Trump is not a defendant in this case. He's not expected to be implicated in any wrongdoing. But the charges against the business he built from the ground up are the closest any prosecutor has gotten to the former guy so far. President Biden on Monday threatened to push for a new windfall profits tax on big energy companies unless they help bring down fuel prices. Biden said it was outrageous for oil and gas companies to be making soaring profits as Russia's invasion of Ukraine drives up energy costs. Meanwhile, BP reported 7.1 billion pounds in quarterly profits on Monday, more than double the amount it made at this time last year. Just saying. Lots of news out of Twitter since Elon Musk took control late Thursday. He's removed 9 members of its board and made himself its sole director. He fired Twitter's top executives and tweeted, "The bird is freed." And he also said that he has plans to loosen restrictions on hate speech and misinformation and make Twitter a haven of, quote, free speech. And although he hasn't issued a single press release, he appears to be announcing big changes in the platform via tweet. That's in between retweeting right-wing conspiracy theories. His latest move? Saying he'll charge a monthly fee of $20 for verified accounts on the site. Those are the blue checks you see. And he said they may also take away those check marks of existing users if they don't start paying for the service within 90 days. But who knows? Author Stephen King tweeted in response to the news, quote, $20 a month to keep my blue check? F that. They should pay me. If that gets instituted, I'm gone like Enron. Well, the self-described Twitter complaint hotline operator himself responded with, quote, we need to pay the bills somehow. Twitter cannot rely entirely on advertisers. How about $8? Really? That from the man who blew $44 billion to buy Twitter for no good reason except his massive ego? Good luck with that. The Supreme Court on Monday heard arguments in 2 cases challenging affirmative action admission policies at Harvard and the University of North Carolina. And it appears that the 6-3 right-wing majority is open to quashing the policies, questioning whether letting colleges consider race in the admission process is legal and constitutional. Just amazing. And finally, there was no Powerball winner Monday night. The new jackpot stands at $1.2 billion. Good luck. Let the lottery gods be with you. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.